Welcome back to the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Collison. This week on the podcast, I have high school FFA advisor and ag teacher, Caitlin Bartling, and she has a great story about how a wide range of experience and several different careers led her to teaching at the high school. She's worked in the corporate world. She's worked at Ellsworth Community College in fundraising. And she teaches our students so much about ag science, and it's much more than just raising animals or knowing what it's like to own land. It's about how ag science affects so many other fields. And I know I learned a lot from just my conversation with her. I learned a lot about what she does and what she communicates to our children and our students every single day. It's a really great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. And as always, if you like what you hear, go ahead and give us a like, follow, or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Enjoy the show. All right, welcome back to the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I'm here today with high school FFA advisor and ag teacher, Caitlin Bartling. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Caitlin.
You betcha, Michael.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited you could get on the pod. This is your second year at IFA. Last year, obviously, was a little bit of a unique year where you started the year and then didn't quite get to finish, as we all did. But I'm happy that you're here. You've been awesome for our students. So I'm excited for people to get to know more about you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate being here.
Yeah. So let's start with where did you grow up, and tell us a little bit about your family.
Okay. So I grew up in the northwest corner of the state in a really small town called Albert City. Population 800. Most people are like, well, where is that? Or I've heard of it. It's right, like if you draw a triangle between Spencer, Storm Lake, and Pocahontas, it's in that corner of the triangle closer to Pocahontas.
Okay.
It's in Buena Vista County.
Yep.
Everybody always mispronounced that county.
Yeah, people say Buena Vista.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the correct Spanish.
Sure.
Version of it, but if you're in Iowa, you Iowify everything, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So it's Buena Vista up there, and I grew up on a farm. My dad was a person who row cropped, and we had hogs. He was one of the first generations of hog cooperatives where producers went together to own the sows together, and then they would take shares of the piglets that were produced.
Oh, cool.
So it was kind of like a precursor to what we know as vertically integrated pork production now. He didn't really like farrowing, but he didn't mind raising pigs. So that was a good trade-off for him to know that he always had a supply of pigs coming in.
Very cool.
Yeah. You're only as good as your business partners, and he had pretty good business partners. It was right up. We were doing that through the 80s, though, and farming in the 80s wasn't fabulous. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. Up through my junior high years. And so I was super blessed to have that kind of support from home. Both of my parents are attended college. My mom's an art teacher, and she's actually the only art teacher who's received the Conservation Educator of the Year Award.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So did she incorporate it into like a part of her lesson? Or?
Yeah, so my mom grew up on a farm in southwest Minnesota, and agriculture was really important to her too. And when she graduated, you had basically three options as a chick. You were a nurse, you were a secretary, or you were a teacher.
Yeah.
So she never really thought about agriculture. And she actually was more interested in theater, like designing the backgrounds for theater productions. But her dad told her maybe you should get a teaching degree as a backup.
Sure.
And so that's what she did.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome to you don't hear a whole lot of you don't hear about many art teachers who also have an agricultural background, but it's probably a cool way to intertwine the two disciplines or content areas, especially in a place like Iowa, where we do have students who are interested in art, but they have similar backgrounds to yours. You know, they grow up on a farm, or they're in a small town where farming or agriculture is such a big part of the community.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always like the saying, you may need a lawyer once a year. You need a minister once a week. You need an accountant 12 times a year or for your taxes. You need a farmer three times a day.
Absolutely. So, and America needs farmers, right?
I mean, that is
just such a fact of life.
Yep.
That's awesome. That's cool. You talked about growing up in northwest Iowa. I'm familiar a little bit with the area you grew up. I've never heard of Albert City until you talked about it. But my wife is from Manson. So and her grandparents are from Emmitsburg. That's her whole family. So kind of, you know, I've made my way up that way before, driven through Pocahontas many times. And you're right, such a big part of that part of the state is the agriculture, the farming. It's built on the backbones of so many hardworking families and small towns where even though, you know, maybe farming has changed a lot, you know, over the years, it has. It's still such a centerpiece of not only the state of Iowa, but like specifically, you know, the small rural communities.
Well, in the town I grew up, they really recognize that. They actually have a festival every August.
Cool.
It's called the Albert City Thresherman and Collector Show. And
I always get a kick out of hearing all the different festivals.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the best?
Like Riverbend Rally.
Yeah.
Grumpy Days. Or So tell me about this festival.
Okay. So they actually have like a parcel of ground where they grow oats. And they do threshing exhibits. And there's welding, and there's a one-room schoolhouse.
And threshing is, so I didn't grow up on a farm. So
okay, so threshing is taking the harvested grain and separating the grain head from the stalk.
There you go.
And also the chaff or the productive coating from the grain kernel itself.
Cool.
So then it's ready for further processing.
Yeah, awesome. Very cool.
Feedstuffs for animals.
Definitely cool. Yep. Well, so you told us about, you know, your family growing up. Did you have any brothers or sisters?
I have an older brother. He's back in that home area. He's married to a gal who's a vet. They have 5 kids, and he's actively engaged in pork production and farming.
Cool.
Yep.
Very cool. And then tell me about your family right now, your kids.
So I am married to a local farmer. That's how I got transplanted to this area. We've been married this past November, 21 years.
Oh, wow. Congrats. Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah.
And we have a daughter, Emma, who's a junior, and a son, Gus, who's in 6th grade.
Very cool.
And they're active in 4-H. Emma's real active in FFA. They help on the family farm. Mm-hmm. So our farm, we're a part of a three-generation farm. My father-in-law, my husband and his brother, and now my nephew is starting to do some stuff more with the farm, but all of the kids really help at the farm.
Yeah. That's I did have friends who grew up on a farm, and and whenever I'd go to visit them or hang out at their houses, I liked it because you could, obviously there were things to do that were so different than growing up in town. Yeah. But one thing I always was kind of like, had to think about was, well, what are your chores today? Because I was going to end up doing some of those with them. And you know, there were some chores that I didn't mind doing,
what chores didn't you mind?
I didn't mind, like, if I had to go, like, walk the field with them or something. Okay. But then, like, one time I remember my friend John Rabe, his dad was like, hey, we're going to load some hogs. Do you want to come do that? And I said, well, before I say yes, you know, let's talk some details. He said, I'll pay you. And I was like, well, what do you pay me? And then he talked about, like, it was going to be at, like, 3 a.m. and was cold out. And I was like, you know what? I think I'll let you guys take this one. I think I'll be fine.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, but you know, I wouldn't consider. I grew up in a small town, Iowa Falls, so I don't know if I'm a city kid, but I'm definitely more of a city kid than the kids who grew up on the farm. And so, I did always appreciate that when I went out there because, my friends, you know, their parents would say, "Hey, you're going to help us do this," and I think I gained some appreciation for, you know, the career of farming, not just, you know, the fact that my friends live there. There's stuff that's being done that's helping many people. It's something bigger than yourself, and that's pretty cool.
Yep. Well, and you know, quite often when we talk about science, technology, engineering, and math, we don't always put agriculture with those. And I always feel like agriculture is the practical application of all of those technologies.
Yes.
And so anytime you can experience what some of those things are, I think is a positive experience because it helps you feel more grounded to what you're consuming because – you know, from the jeans I'm wearing to even the hair products that I have to what I ate and the wood that's in these tables, all of those are related to agriculture.
Yeah.
And I get such a kick out of doing a stump the chump kind of thing first day with my 8th graders because most of them are coming in. They've never had agriculture before.
Yeah. They're a lot like Michael Collison in 8th grade.
Well, no, I think they probably would have been like one of those kids, give me it, let me jump in, let me try it.
Yeah.
And there are some kids who are like, yeah, this is so lame, I've got to do this.
Yeah.
And they're pretty sure agriculture isn't important to them. Mm. And when I tell them to make a list of everything that they've physically touched or done in that day, let's find something that's not ag-related.
Yeah, that's hard
and
to do.
And we can't do it, typically. They're like, how about my Game Boy? Well, you know, the plastics in it might have animal byproducts. And, you know, the technology that allows you to do that is the same technology that GPS uses, or, you know, drawing those parallels for them.
That's really cool. And we talk all the time about providing real life connections to our students and what we teach. There it is right there.
Mine's so easy to do that with.
Yeah. Yeah. English literatures can be challenging sometimes.
I bet it can be.
But no, that's awesome. So we've shifted to school a little bit. Yep. Let's talk about you when you were a student. What did you like and dislike about being a student?
Oh, boy. So I told you when you asked me to do this that I was a little bit nervous because you're somebody who's high on the woo scale.
I believe you said I would be the worst cocktail party conversation guest.
Yes.
Like the worst person to talk to.
Yep. That's me. And that's who I've always been. Uh-huh. And my parents always encouraged me to embrace my inner weirdness and inner nerd. And there was nothing wrong with me for being that way.
Yeah.
But high school kids and junior high kids don't necessarily enjoy people like that. Uh-huh. And so I think the social dynamics of it were hard. You know, I was 5'11" or 5'10¾" before I was a freshman in high school.
Oh, yeah.
I was a full year older than most of the kids in my class because I had an August birthday, and my mom, being an educator, said, I'm not going to start her.
Sure.
She has her whole life to
be an
adult.
Not going to start her. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't have pre-K back then. We didn't have 2 years of preschool. We had 1 year of preschool.
Yep.
And so she just saw the benefits of older, being older for your grade age.
Yeah.
And so she didn't start me. And I have no regrets for that. Yeah. I appreciate that my parents did that for me.
That's, can I ask you a little bit more about that? Because our daughter, Mia, was born in June, and that's, you know, she's so young. At the same time, we got to start kind of thinking about that. You know, she's going to be 2 in next June. And, you know, that's one thing my wife and I have talked about. Mm-hmm. So you would say that the move would be have her be older for her grade.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I even saw a huge difference before I had this career. I was a fundraiser at Ellsworth, and I had a big window that looked out onto the campus, and, you know, the kids who are older were, you know, there are always exceptions to the rule, but by and large, our older freshmen had an easier time acclimating in.
Yeah.
They had a better, easier time self-regulating, getting themselves to class and doing the work. You know, you had a 17-year-old freshman compared to a 19-year-old freshman.
Big difference.
17-year-old freshman was like, shiny squirrel. and I got to see that because I'd give them a campus tour.
Yeah.
And I'd always ask, so how old are all of you? And I'd get you kind of identify the groups. How many of you are from the city? How many of you are from rural communities? Kind of identify those groups. And you could definitely see a difference in attention span and respect and just ability to do that self-regulation between those age groups.
Definitely, definitely.
And so I don't regret that.
Awesome. So you said the maybe the social stuff wasn't your favorite, but
no.
What did you like about being a student?
So I was really into, I was out for every activity you could find. I did plays, I did speech. I was a letter earner in softball, basketball, volleyball, and drill team.
Cool.
I love the activities and I love competitions. We've talked one other time about, are you a competitive person?
Yeah.
And I'm a non-competitive competitor.
Sure.
Like, I'm always about your personal best.
Yeah.
Hitting and striving and practicing for that personal best. Mm-hmm. The actual outcome of the game, I can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
As long as it was played fairly.
Yep. And if you knew you did your best, you're okay with that outcome. That's cool.
Or I felt like it was a fair
assessment
of, you know, there's a lot of ways that things can be unfair or feel unfair. Mm-hmm. I'm really about that personal best.
Awesome. Yeah. It's cool that you said you were involved in plays and speech. I was in the spring play every year and I always liked that because I played basketball, but it was cool to be in an activity maybe with, some different friends who didn't play basketball to be a part of something that was different. I think you probably could agree with that. It was a cool experience to be a part of something like that.
Well, and I was super fortunate that I had 4-H.
Yeah.
And my 4-H tribe was where I found my kindred spirits. You know, my high school graduating class was 28 with 2 exchange students.
Wow.
And we had all been together since we were in kindergarten. I think halfway through our first grade year, they split us into 2 sections. So there were like 2 sections of 14. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we were with them.
Yep.
I mean, we knew each other when we were eating glue and doing stupid things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to let go of those memories of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking back on it, I probably wasn't the best, like, co-conspirator. I was too worried about getting in trouble.
Sure.
And I was...
Teacher's kid.
Well, my mom did not teach in my school district. Okay. So I was fortunate that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sister So Good's not so much fun to hang out with.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Yeah. So awesome. the social aspects, I would say, were my hardest parts. Mm-hmm. But the competitions and the activities were the part. And, you know, there were a couple of classes that just totally felt authentic and cool to me. And you know, my ag classes were one. And I had a really awesome choir teacher.
Yeah.
That let us be who we were.
That's cool.
And then my social studies teacher, he was another one that was very definitely going into his classroom. You didn't have to be anybody other than who you were.
That's awesome. That's such an empowering feeling for students to feel like they can be comfortable in their own skin,
you know,
in the classroom. And I think it's something that we as teachers, we're always trying to do better at is mm-hmm. how can we make our students feel comfortable? Because we also know we're going to get more out of their learning experience that way.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and in ag, there are so many kids, they're doing things that are completely novel to them. Like you've got kids who are experts on a topic in the classroom, and they've got people who've never seen a cow.
Sure.
And so you have to find the space in between where everybody can feel safe to mess up.
Yeah.
And I mess up on the daily in front of them. And I figure a good belly laugh is good for all of us.
Yes. Own it. Right.
Oh yeah.
I say that to my students all the time. I'm like, guys, I'm going to make mistakes. And when I do, I just go, oh man, I screwed that up.
Oh yeah. Yep.
They appreciate it.
Yeah. And I do it on the daily, you know, as a new teacher, there are lots of things that I'm like, oof, could have done that one better. Or that did not go like I had it planned out in my head. Mm-hmm. But I had it planned out in my head for me as a student, not all of you.
Yeah.
And so getting out of your own head is sometimes hard to do, but it's necessary so everybody can enjoy themselves and
absolutely
learn something out of it.
So you had talked about how you were working for Ellsworth Community College before. Mm-hmm. I guess just describe a little bit how your path led you here to Iowa Falls Alden as a teacher.
Okay, so I'm the oldest like second year teacher, I think, around.
This is only your second year total? I didn't know that. I mean, I think I knew it was your second year here, but wow, you're
no, I'm a new teacher.
As when I walk into your room, I feel like you have a great handle on it. Like you've been teaching for years. So that's
hilarious.
That's awesome.
Boy, I've got you buffaloed. So right out of college, I went and I worked for an ag PR agency. Ag economy took a crash in 98. And so I came back and Mike and I were getting engaged. I sold sales advertising for the Farm Bureau spokesman for a short year. And then a job came open to be the executive director of the Iowa Sheep Industry Association from a home office.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And
never had that happen on the pod. So we'll cut it out.
That's okay. And you know, I'm one of those people, I always have a plan. Like I've got goals and I've got, you know, I got my eye on a prize somewhere.
Yep.
And my goal out of college was to work for an ag PR agency, check that off, be in ag sales, check that off, and then work from home for a commodity organization. But I didn't think I would get to that home commodity organization step until I was in maybe my 30s or 40s.
Yeah, yeah.
And I achieved that by the time I was 27.
Oh, wow.
No, actually 25. And
it's the plan has changed.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I did that for 5 years. And I did everything from consumer education programming to grassroots lobbying to running their state fair food stand for 2.5 weeks out of the year.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, and I was their only paid employee. I also worked with checkoff funds, implementing programming from that. And I really enjoyed that. But then we had my daughter mm-hmm. and
everything changes.
Oh, it totally does. And I wanted a separation between work and home.
Yeah.
And I also wanted the freedom to be able to be her mom.
Yeah.
And I just didn't feel like I was going to get that with as many hours as I needed to do. And there's a little bit, you know, it was a political organization. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I can handle politics fine, and other times, and at some points in time, you have to say, the politics are done, I'm ready to move on.
Sure. Or,
these politics aren't in my favor, I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. And I had done everything that I felt like I could. They were in the red when I started, and by the time I left them, they had a $5,000 surplus.
Oh, okay.
So I felt like I had done
yeah.
what I needed to
sure.
do for them. And so then this job showed up at Ellsworth that was half time for exactly the same money I was making at the Shoe Association. So, and I had my Fridays off. So to me, that was a no brainer.
Yeah.
And I did that for 15 years and eventually it turned into a full-time position. I was their fundraiser and alumni director.
Very cool.
So yeah, it was a really neat, I met a lot of really neat people, saw them wanting to do really good things for our community. I helped with the fundraising on the Ag and Equine Center, the Dale Howard Center. And then we had a $1.25 million scholarship campaign for the 125th anniversary. So
that's awesome. And it's cool to be able to, you know, drive around the community and see, you know, tangible evidence. Like I helped with that, you know, and that's got to make you proud.
Oh, so proud. And, you know, I'm somebody who wants to make a positive difference in my community. Mm-hmm. And I don't need my name on something to feel, to be a part of it.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd much rather be in the kitchen washing dishes at an event.
Yeah.
Than be the person out front on the podium or microphone leading something.
Yeah.
I'm far more comfortable doing the behind the scenes work to make sure it's successful than the upfront stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's a really cool thing. And like speaking as a basketball coach who sees our kids get to utilize a space like the Dale Howard Center. Yeah. Thanks for all your efforts with that.
Well, there were so many people who made that happen, and it was so much fun to watch the community be excited for that resource. But while I was there, I got asked to adjunct in the ag department and do a careers course because they need a second section of it and they didn't have enough teachers to cover it. And so I did that, and I was really surprised how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Like it was fun, and it was so much fun to see like kids take, you know, show up with their resume. I remember my first non-traditional student showed up with, I think it was a 12 or 15 page resume off of a form.
Yep. Yep.
And there's a lot of blank space and a lot of, it was.
Sit here, buddy. We got to figure this out.
Yeah. So I said, do you want the red pen or should we just talk through this? And he goes, I'm going to need the red pen because I think there's going to be more than I can remember. but when he got done, he had a fabulous resume.
Yeah.
And he's reached out several times to me to say thanks for that help.
That's cool.
So that was my first taste of being able to make a difference and seeing someone take a lesson from concept to practice.
Yeah.
And I'm an experiential learner, so I have to do it to truly understand it.
Yeah.
And so that's something that really appealed to me. And I started thinking, you know, I may not want to be a fundraiser for the rest of my life. When I was in high school, the last thing I ever wanted to do was fundraising. Like I was the kid who'd go to the sponsor or the coach and say, how much are you expecting to make off me?
Yeah.
I've got my summer job money. Can I just write you a check?
Yep. Yeah.
And they'd always look at me like, oh, why are you doing this to me, Bean? But that to me was far easier. So that I stayed in fundraising for 15 years when that was really my mode of operation. I'm surprised that I stayed that long. Mm-hmm. And I did really enjoy it. But that wasn't what I saw myself doing until retirement.
For sure.
And so I started on my master's degree in ag ed then.
That's awesome. And I think that's cool. This has been a common theme with some of the teachers that I've interviewed. There's always been a unique journey to teaching. And, you know, I think that also is part of the profession is, you know, we do have students who they go right into college and they know that's what they want to do. But we also have lots of great teachers who they have some other experiences that lead them to teaching. And for you, it was that adjunct professor gig, you know, if you didn't have that, who knows? But all it took was that one aha moment to be like, this is awesome. This is a cool feeling.
Well, the other thing too is when I graduated from high school in 1994, way back in the day, I had never seen a female ag teacher.
Yeah.
And so I think when you don't see someone like yourself, either in color or gender, in a role or a position, you may not think that that is really a path that is open to you, whether you consciously think that or you just kind of accept it.
That's so true. Yeah.
So for me, I had never ever seen a female ag teacher. Uh-huh. And I was seeing female ag teachers starting to become more the norm. Uh-huh. We're now at the 50-50, like it's 50-50 in the state of Iowa, women to men ag teachers. But that's been within the last 5 years, 5 to 10 years. So that's kind of a recent change.
And that's another cool thing to be able to maybe be that example for some of our students. Mm-hmm. You know, we have students who are very involved in FFA and 4-H and agriculture. and to see you, you know, teaching them, that could lead and open a few doors for some of our students. That's
cool. I hope so. Yeah. I hope by me talking about it too, that it allows them to say that, you know, this isn't how it has to be. Yeah. We can be trend changers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely. Absolutely. So I ask this question to teachers and their response is usually the same. I say, what do you like to do with your free time? And it's usually what free time,
yeah.
but I know that, you know, there is maybe some free time, that teachers have. So what do you like to do when you do have some free time?
Okay. So for me, being creative is something that is like, that's where I get my recharge. So, and that creativity for me takes a lot of different paths. Mm-hmm. So I love to bake, and cook. I actually have a blog because I also like to write.
I like to bake as well.
Oh, really? I'll have to send.
I talked about it with Jesse Van Hove on our podcast.
I heard you guys' pie chat.
Yep. So yeah. I love to bake. So any good recipes, send them to me. Okay. I love to try them.
Well, I do have a pie recipe that sold for probably $1,500 one time.
Really?
I'll share that one with you.
Definitely share that one with you.
Yep. We joked at the foundation that was the Ellsworth apple pie because we served it to now Governor Reynolds when she was there for an event. For the trustees.
Yep.
And I had made the pies for the event to kind of manage costs. Mm-hmm. And she got up and spoke, and then she went back, like they were supposed to be leaving. She went back to her place to finish her pie.
Yeah, she wasn't going to let that go.
Don Faber made sure I knew that that's what went down. And I just thought that was a hoot and a half.
That's awesome. So, yeah. So you love to bake and cook.
Yep. And I also like to do some creative writing. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy working with my kids in their projects. I'm watching, we have two feeder calves in our barn right now. Mike made me a porch swing to propose to me on many years ago. And that porch swing has found a lot of different places on our place, but sitting in the barn now, it's hung. And just sitting there and swinging on that is something that totally gives me peace and recharges me. Even when it's cold outside, you bundle up and go out there and sit and swing for a few minutes and you can get your center back.
Absolutely. Be one with the sounds, you know, too. Yeah. You got the animals and the wind and it's beautiful.
Yeah. And the smells.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who don't like barn smells, but well cared for barn has its own scent and it can smell really good.
Yeah.
I also really like fairs.
Yep.
So if there's a fair around and you can get a corn dog and a lemonade shake up, I'm a happy chick.
I love all the fried food at the fair. It's so good.
Not all the fried food, just a corn dog. Too much is too much. Like too much of a good thing is not a good thing. But I do love fairs. I like people watching.
Me too.
Yeah.
I love to do that in the airport. I just get yourself something to eat and just kind of watch people go by and I love to think about where are they going? What's going on? You know, and the same thing can be true at fairs as well.
Oh, totally. Are they an exhibitor? Are they there for a presentation? Are they in like the varied industry building schlepping pots and pans? Did they lose somebody? I mean, you can see that go down.
Kevin!
Too. Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are plenty of Home Alone moments.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, those are kind of the things. I like to quilt too. Mm-hmm. I'm on the realm of dyslexic, like on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so reading patterns can sometimes be difficult for me. Mm-hmm. But if it's something I can, like nine patches and that don't require a lot of brain power, those types of things I'm fine with.
Awesome. That's cool. Yeah. I think, as teachers, we got to have our vices, whatever it is that, you know, gets us to get back to center. And, you know, this is a job where I know people love, my friends always love to say, hey, you got summers off. Yeah, but those 9 months, that's a grind and you got to do something for yourself.
And for egg, like I've got extra
contract
days because I've got two fairs that students exhibit at and I should be checking on their projects. I have to go out and tag livestock throughout the summer. And then there's state fair too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it doesn't
stop.
No, it doesn't stop. But now that we have the farm, I'm sure it'll change yet again in terms of how my summer is structured. But you know, this last year with COVID, I'm a person who is wired to show up.
Yeah.
It was really hard for me not to have a place to show up.
Yeah.
And such an open end on when things needed to be done. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, for agriculture is driven by the seasons and you've got deadlines and you have to do things by certain dates. Otherwise they won't turn out.
Yeah.
So that was really, really hard for me.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. Did you struggle through that?
Oh, I did. You know, you have certain units you need to get through or standards or things like that. And there was this feeling in the spring that was almost just kind of like, we're just not going to get to it, are we? And it was that realization of, you know, we all had hope that we were going to return. And then it was kind of a, what's our plan going to be when we return?
Yep.
But then it became clearer and clearer that it was not, we were not going to go back. And, and so it was a struggle, you know, but I think the thing that's been cool about teachers and students is we've adapted. We're resilient. Yeah. And, you know, we're making this year work, even though it's a little crazy for sure.
So last year when COVID kind of hit and closed us down, last year I was not a real teacher. Mm-hmm. I was an intern teacher.
Okay.
My master's program was aimed at student or teacher licensure.
Yeah.
But because I was working full time and we had our health insurance through me through the college, I couldn't take a semester off to go student teach. And I finished.
So you were actually working on it while you were teaching.
So I finished my master's degree in June, and the job here opened up in July. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of panic stricken because I wanted to apply, but I didn't have a teaching license.
Yeah.
And so I tried to go through Iowa State UNI and Iowa's rapid licensure program. And they said, no, we won't accept your master's program, even though there were a lot of classes that were almost identical titles. Sure. And I kind of sat there and scratched my head and said, well, I don't have 2 years because it was 1 year of coursework and then 1 year of internship.
Yep.
This isn't going to work. And then I discovered Morningside's rapid licensure program, and they evaluated my master's degree and said, you've already taken the first year. There's no reason to repeat this.
Yeah.
We'll admit you as an intern teacher. So I took 12 credits last year while I was teaching.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty busy.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
And in February, I got really sick with like a bronchitis kind of thing. I kind of wonder if it wasn't COVID.
It might have been.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
But it was hard to come back from that, and I was getting behind on my coursework. And so COVID happened when my body and mind needed it to.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not unaware of how hard COVID has been on so many people, but I kind of feel like maybe I wouldn't have made it through that grind without that.
Yeah, there's certainly, you know, has been there's been so many stories of people, you know, where the pandemic has been awful for them.
Yeah.
And I'm not minimizing that at all, but I like you, there was a pandemic positive. I got to spend a lot of time with my daughter,
and you'll never get that time back.
And I will never get it back. Yeah. And for me as a basketball coach from basically November to March, it's pretty crazy.
Intense,
Like I saw her this morning and I didn't see her last night and I won't see her tonight.
Yep.
I'll see her tomorrow morning. And so I was really struggling with that during the basketball season last year. And then I had 3 months where I was with her every day.
Yep.
And by the end of it, I'm not so sure there weren't some days where I was like, hey, I'd go back to basketball season. Or not. but there were so many days where I just loved being with her.
I appreciate that honesty.
Yeah. You know, and she was a tough cookie, and I'll tell you, I got a whole lot better about being with her, but, it was kind of like what you're saying. For me, it was a little bit of a positive to have that time. And, you know, I don't want it to happen again but I do think teachers got an opportunity to maybe recharge at a time when they don't normally get that. You know, usually March is pretty like, hey, we don't really have a break until the end if you don't have a spring break, but yeah.
Well, and even our online sessions, while they weren't like attendance and getting high school kids to engage in that open-ended learning J-term kind of mindset, was a little disappointing. I was able to partner teach with Cody Moses.
He said he loved that experience, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, he and I are good friends, and he talked about it with me all the time.
Oh, really? Yeah. And Kevin Seidel, too.
Yeah.
And both of them are very different styles.
Yeah.
But I learned so much working with both of those guys on what we were teaching with Cody. We were doing Journey 2050, which is a basically a sociological, but also practicing the tenets of agriculture through a video game. How are we going to feed the population in 2050, because that's the point where they predict that resources in terms of land and production capacity will be outstripped by population.
Sure.
And if we're looking at it from right now, that's when eighth graders right now are about 34 or 40.
They're going to be the ones who are deciding these things.
And they're going to be the ones in the trenches with kids to feed and care for and parents to care for on the other side and resources that may be limited.
Yeah.
And to get them thinking about this now so it doesn't sneak up on them or they are totally oblivious to what could be.
Yeah. When you say that, I won't lie, there's a little anxiety of like, oh my gosh, these are things I don't think about, you know? And
that's
probably gotta
why
be...
I'm the worst cocktail person in the world, because that stuff is going through my head all the time.
Yeah. And it probably should be going through more people's brains, you know, like what can we do to be better and make sure this isn't a problem when we get to 2050.
Well, and even if we look at like something as simple as pop cans, pop cans are in short supply right now. Like Barks Root Beer is not producing canned pop because pop cans are in short supply.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, one part of the chain gets a little bit broken or tweaked. And right now it's because of employment show up or delays in supplies. Mm-hmm. And it changes whether something's even available in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we saw couple of meat packing plants closed, what did that do to our meat prices? Mm-hmm. And you know, my family was fine because we produce meat and we had our own meat in the freezer, but I thought of so many of our students who, you know, $10 worth of meat is maybe 25% of their weekly grocery budget. And if that same $10 is now worth 15, what are they giving up?
Because you're right, it's something would have to go. That's so true. Definitely. Yeah. Well, we talked before the pod about the Mount Rushmore category. You have heard the podcast before. And I initially asked you, what would be a great Mount Rushmore question? And I believe you said, I love talking about policy and legislature. And I was kind of like, hey, we can do that for sure. I don't know how much I'll be able to contribute to that. And it's not about me. It's about you in this episode. But then you did share with me, you said, well, I'd love to talk about my favorite movies too. Yep. So a Mount Rushmore list is a group of four, a special group of four of something. And so I want to know your Mount Rushmore of your favorite movies.
Okay. So I really like movies, but I'm kind of specific to genres. Like I stay away from horror
I love scary movies.
Oh, they freak me out because I become so involved in what I watch. It's just like when I read a book, those characters become friends of mine.
Yeah.
So when I watch a movie, it's a passive book.
Sure.
Because it's, you know, there's character, there's a storyline, there's emotion, all those same things. And I am either over empathetic or I become way too engrossed in it. And so scary movies, I literally jump out of my seat or I'm the person in the movie theater who like says a expletive when they get a little scared. Which is horrifying to me to do that in public. So I just stay away from them.
That's probably a good call.
Not enjoyable for me at all.
Yeah.
And like thrillers, super high suspense ones, they kind of bother me a little bit too. Or ones with a lot of violence. Mm-hmm. We watched the one about fire jumpers. And the kids, we were talking about the Mount Rushmore list at supper last night. And I was asking them what theirs were. And they were like, yeah, mom can't say this one. She did not enjoy that. She cried in the car on the way home. Yep, you're right.
That's funny.
They're like, we'd like to see it again. I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, no, not with me.
Yep. So my four are kind of a weird group. So first of all is the Goonies.
Love the Goonies.
Yeah. I'm a child of the 80s.
Yep.
And to me, that is the ultimate thing of a social group and the creation of a tribe.
Yes.
They had each other's back.
Yeah.
And there's also, you know, the underdog.
Yeah.
You know, Chunk is the hero of that movie and kindness is how he became that hero, you know, to the guy with the different abilities and that. Yeah. And
I love what you said about a group becoming a tribe. And obviously, there's the group of the Goonies, you know, who are friends. But then you've got, you know, the older brother who is so unlike his younger brother.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't remember all the names. The older brother's name is, I can't remember the older brother's name, but Sean Astin's character, he's so different from him. And but they come together because they need to or they're going to. they're not going to make it through the cave. You know, it's a pretty cool movie.
Well, and even the adversity in the background of all of them losing their homes to this development.
Yes.
And how can they save their homes? And is this discovery what's going to save the homes?
Yeah.
Because none of them can afford to buy out the development.
Absolutely. And then that ability to say, we found this, we're not going to use it for personal gain of like material, we're going to use it to save our community.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think, yeah. So that's why I just, and there are some spot on funny.
Yes.
yeah, I have a pretty good sense of humor and I love a good belly laugh.
Yeah.
So there's some pretty good stuff in that in terms of comedy,
yeah.
Both physical and turn of word comedy
for sure.
That make my brain just like joyful. The other one, that I really like that's kind of along that same line is Secondhand Lions.
Oh, okay.
I really like how two guys say, this isn't our comfort zone, but maybe this is okay and it may serve the purpose. You know, the one says, well, if we take the kid on, it's going to tick off the family. Mm. And finding a way to do the right thing, mm-hmm. even when it's not comfortable.
Yeah. That's integrity, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
And also how they didn't flaunt their wealth, mm-hmm. And how they created their own tribe again.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kid was not wanted, but, you know, he just kind of hung in there with them mm-hmm. and he willingly jumped into whatever experience they brought to him.
Yeah.
That to me is something that was way fun to watch too. And again, the whole, like my family, that was on two of our other family members. Mount Rushmore list too.
Oh, cool.
And as soon as we said that, we started, you know, saying catchphrases like smooth and some of those types of things.
That's probably part of what contributes to it too.
Oh, yeah.
A shared love between family members.
Yep. So that's another one that I love. JFK.
Yeah. You were telling me yesterday that.
That came out when I was like either eighth grade or freshman in high school. And our youth group crew watched that together and as just like a social fun thing, totally not church related. But I went back and watched it twice in the movie theater. And I think I've seen it at least twice since then. And the whole thought of a conspiracy truly intrigued me. I don't know that I buy it.
Sure.
But the idea of a conspiracy and how can a conspiracy be carried out and how easily are we able to gloss over all of the subcurrents and subcultures if we're comfortable.
Yeah.
And that is something that has always really interested me. And I've always kind of thought, it maybe happened. maybe
yeah.
not.
Yeah.
But, you know, Oliver Stone's kind of a little left of center mm-hmm. on his perception of things. So who knows?
Sure.
But I think that's an interesting one to ponder and you know, how we accept things at face value or ignore things that we see that may be indicative of something else going on.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And then Hidden Figures is probably my most recent favorite.
Yeah, that just came out a few years ago, right?
Yeah. African-American women who served in NASA and their role and how it wasn't talked about. You know, even just this week, the admission of the Negro League Baseball.
Yeah, just came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those types of things, I think we have to talk about them.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because of my experience as a chick. Not going into a field because I didn't see people like myself in it. Maybe that's why it resonated with me. I'm not really sure, but the characters and the women in that story were just so relatable.
Yeah.
And I just really feel like we have to talk about those issues if we want things to change.
Totally agree. Couldn't agree more. That's this year in my English 1 class, you know, we actually decided to teach the book, The Hate You Give.
Okay.
And, you know, there's some definitely uncomfortable conversations that happen.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, if we do want people to understand perspectives mm-hmm. and, you know, and want people to feel like, hey, I can do things or I do deserve that mm-hmm. right or, you know, just like others do, we got to talk about it with our students sometimes, you know, and that's an important thing.
Well, and even the strength for the guy who was their supervisor, how he change things, even in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And he wasn't like, if I see something wrong, I'm a little too blunt. I'm a little too harsh. I'm not the person to be a change agent because
sure.
I'll destroy the foundation that it stands on just because of my personality, you know, Roland's China shop. But the subtleness that he used at certain points mm-hmm. to overcome And then at other points where he was not willing to use his influencer sphere, I thought was interesting to look at as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a fifth one that I was like, oh, I can't get, too bad there's not
so
five faces.
Honorable mention.
Honorable mention would be Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken.
I've never seen that. No.
It's from my childhood. Mm-hmm. It's a true story of a gal who was a horse diver. Mm-hmm. And they would ride a horse up basically three stories and then dive into a pool of water. And her eyes were open on one of her jumps and she became blind.
Oh, wow.
Because the force of the water hitting her eye detached her retinas.
Yeah.
And she was engaged to be married to a guy that her family maybe didn't think was the right person. And she had kind of run away from her family. And there's just like a lot of layers. But it, again, it's another underdog story.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like all my Mount Rushmores are at their base. There's an underdog current.
Yeah, that's a cool thing though. That's everyone has their archetypes that they gravitate towards, and stories that they like. So that's probably why.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's cool. So we talked about, how you got into teaching. We've talked about your Mount Rushmore. We've talked about a lot of that stuff. And maybe with this next question, you've already kind of hit on it, just with your various experiences. If you didn't teach, I know you just started your teaching career, but if you didn't teach, what do you think you might want to pursue a career in?
Oofta. So like there's not enough lifetime left for me to do all the things I would like to do. I really like research.
Yeah.
Which is really weird, but I love qualitative and quantitative research. If I could find a way to do research about how to change attitudes and perceptions about agriculture and agricultural practices, because there's so much misinformation, I would love to do that. I would also, if I won the lottery, I would build a locker plant and have a 3-day-a-week steakhouse.
Nice.
Yeah, because I love food.
Yeah, me too.
And I love meat science.
Yeah.
And I love working with producers. So, work with a producer, bring it from the gate to the plate.
Yeah.
To me, that would be like bomb.
Yeah. You were actually talking to me yesterday about, we were talking about the purchase that our school district has made of the property just north of the building.
Yep.
And how you're very excited about it, but you're also, you're trying to make sure everything is in order before any projects happen, because there's so much to think about when, in terms of raising animals from when they're born to when that food hits your plate. And so talk a little bit about that, just about that purchase and what it's going to mean for our kids and what we're going to do with that.
So, one of my first concerns always is how we're perceived and how agriculture is perceived. And I want to make sure that we have quality animals that we're putting in there. The next thing is I want to make sure that those animals are secure. Because it's a school property, sometimes people feel like they own the property because they're taxpayers.
Sure.
And that they should be able to pop in and see something anytime they want. And, when you're dealing with livestock, it's like dealing with little kids.
Yeah.
They have a pattern and, for feeding morning and night.
You don't want to mess with the routine.
No, you don't. Because then it impacts their quality of life and their gaining.
Yep.
So, making sure that we have the right animals, the right schedule set up, and also security. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen things here in Hardin County with pork integrators where they've been targeted. And I would hate to have my students' projects targeted without there being some layer of protection, either through our surveillance system or through actually being able to lock the barn doors.
Yeah.
So those are the things that we're trying to get put into place right now. We're going to probably start a little bit slow because of COVID.
Yep.
And also because of our block scheduling, If I have an ANSI class, it's only 8 weeks. There's not very many animals that I can take from birth to market in 8 weeks. Chickens actually will do that for me close. So we're trying to get some eggs in to get hatched because we bought a chicken incubator last year with some Perkins funding. So that'll probably be our first project. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get some stuff moved over there now that it's snowed. Like I don't have alleys or lanes.
Where you can just wheel things over.
So for me to bring in a truckload of chicken feed, I'm gonna have to walk it from the driveway back into the building.
Yeah.
And those are some things that may make me sound lazy, but there's time efficiency here. I have 7 periods that I teach.
Yeah.
So, and only 2 of them are repeated.
Yep.
So there's that issue for me to consider too. So I have to consider time and planning and that.
Yeah, the schedule stuff is something that's you get to get Mr. Hutchinson's ear on, I'm sure, and say, hey, you know, if we're going to do this, this is something we got to think about.
He's been super supportive of everything that I've asked for. So I have no complaints. You know, the hard part about teaching ag is we have ag business. Mm-hmm. We have floriculture. We have horticulture. We have agronomy. We have animal science. We have communications. All of those things happen under ag.
Yeah.
And just listing those topics off, I got 6 things right there.
Yeah.
And I'm only here at the school building 5 periods because I'm at the middle school for 2 periods. So, you know, we have to be strategic and stack things and offer them in rotation mm-hmm. to make sure that our kids get those opportunities.
Definitely.
To experience those things.
Definitely. So the final question I always ask the teachers that I have on is, what's your why? Why do you teach? Why do you do what you do?
It's that gate to plate. Mm-hmm. To me, we are each responsible for our consumption and understanding how our consuming impacts other people. I think there are a lot of choices in terms of food production, and none of them are wrong, and none of them are 100% right. And so my why is making sure kids understand how to find the information, how to discern what a fair price is, and if they want to, how to produce some of their own food to take some of that insecurity away.
Yeah. And to think for themselves on that too.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. You know, because I know for me, I just go to the meat counter and I say, oh, that's the best deal. And that's what I like.
Yep.
And, I could probably benefit from taking a few of your classes.
Well, you're welcome any day you want.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Caitlin, for being on the pod.
Yeah.
You've been an awesome addition to our staff. And
Thank you.
This has been a joy for me to get to know you a little bit better and also learn some things for sure. I'll definitely be down in your room in the future to ask some more questions.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And the door's always open.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I want to give a special shout out to junior Isabel Nicozzle, who created our awesome logo for the podcast, and freshman Val Hensley, who created all of our original music for the podcast. If you like what you hear, give us a like, follow, or subscription on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you next time.